Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. On the show today, we have reports from Sue Shand and Jonathan Evans. Later, Alice Bryant brings us the program Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with an American story. We will hear part one of The Blue Hotel by Stephen Crane. Here's Susan Shand.
A new study by Gallup shows fewer people believe in American leadership around the world. With only 31% approval, the United States rating is lower than Germany and China, and in a tie with Russia. It shows international views of American leadership remained about the same in the second year of Donald Trump's presidency. It dropped 18 points during Trump's first year. Gallup has been carrying out the research since 2007. The 2018 study was released Thursday. It examined the answers of people from 133 countries. The report suggests that people around the world no longer believe in America's international commitments. It says the unpredictability of the U.S. president is now somewhat expected. Both China and Russia gained in the new study. China's median approval rating rose to 34%, and Russia's rating reached 30%. Russia and China's approval ratings increased in nations where the U.S. decreased, including Mexico and Turkey. Germany received the highest median approval rating at 39%, but it was Germany's first rating below 40% in 10 years. John Clifton is Gallup's global managing partner. He said in the report that Trump's America First policy was not winning friends around the world. It also said that Trump has taken many unpopular decisions since he took office. These include pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, the Paris Climate Accord, and the Iran nuclear deal. It also includes Trump's trade wars with Europe and China. Clifton said that the effects of Trump's actions will hurt American interests abroad. He pointed to research from Dartmouth College and the University of Sydney that found public opinion about U.S. foreign policy in foreign countries does affect their policies toward the U.S. The report said the U.S.'s leadership image is very poor in Europe. Its disapproval rating was 59%, up 3 points from 2017. While Europeans' view of American leadership was low, their view of Russian leadership was even lower, at 21%. They equally disliked the leadership of Russia and the United States. Nearly 6 in 10 Europeans disapproved of the leadership of the two countries. Europeans had the highest rating for Germany's leadership, with 56% approving. The U.S. leadership rating increased in the Americas from 24% to 31%. Last year, the U.S. renegotiated the North American Free Trade Agreement with Canada and Mexico. Those two countries had two of the highest disapproval numbers for American leadership. 79% of Canadians and 74% of Mexicans disapproved of U.S. leadership in 2018. The approval numbers for the U.S., Germany, China, and Russia were roughly the same in the Americas, but the disapproval rating for the United States at 53% was much higher than the other countries. In Asia, the approval of U.S. leadership increased slightly since last year, but it was still very low at 32%. The majorities of just five countries, Israel, the Philippines, Mongolia, Nepal, and Myanmar, approved of American leadership. Gallup said the two things that probably hurt the U.S. image most in the region were the trade war with China and the withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal. China's approval rating was only a little higher at 34%. Russia came in at 32% and Germany at 36%. American image was strongest in Africa, the Gallup study said. More than half of Africans in the study viewed American leadership favorably. The countries with the most favorable view of the leadership of the United States were Togo, Guinea, Niger, and Ghana. Africans also had a favorable view of China, which has invested heavily in the continent. I'm Susan Shand.
The old center of Benghazi suffered severe damage during Libya's civil war. Most people living there were more concerned with getting fuel and moving to safer areas than they were with buying brand-name clothing. But new stores and eateries are opening along one street in the city center, Venice Street. And they have many people excited about shopping. Imported goods to the country were limited between 2014 and 2017. Fighting between the Libyan National Army and its mostly Islamist opponents forced Benghazi's port to close. Elsewhere around the city, some buildings still have bullet holes dating back to World War II. During that time, Benghazi changed control between British and German troops. Former leader Muammar Gaddafi ignored eastern Libya during his 42 years in power as punishment for political opposition there. Venice Street was mostly undeveloped until Gaddafi's overthrow in 2011. Today, newly opened clothing stores along Venice Street carry famous international brands. People in Benghazi do have money in their banks, but a shortage of banknotes means they do not necessarily have physical money. However, some shops along Venice Street accept checks as payment for an additional cost. Ahmed Alorfi runs one of the new fashion stores there. He told the Reuters news service he has high hopes for Venice Street. He said, "We have security and the ambition to be on the same level as the Champs-Élysées." I'm Jonathan Evans.
Hello, and welcome to Ask a Teacher. In today's program, we compare two things that sound and look the same, but are used a little differently. Listen to our reader's request.
I want to know the uses of maybe and may be. These two words really drive me crazy.
Hi, and thanks for writing to us. Maybe the words drive you crazy, but I may be the right person to help. We use both maybe and may be to talk about possibility. The main difference is that they are different parts of speech. As one word, maybe is an adverb, a word that describes a verb, an adjective, another adverb, or a sentence. As an adverb, maybe has the same meaning as possibly. We use it to talk about a future possible action or happening.
Maybe I'll go for a swim tomorrow morning.
We also use it to say that something is possibly correct or true.
There are maybe three more people coming.
We can also use it to respond to a request or suggestion.
Do you want to go for a swim tomorrow?
Maybe. I have to check my plans. Thanks.
Now let's talk about may be, which is two words. As separate words, may be acts as a verb phrase and means might be or could be. For this usage, the word may is a modal verb, and be can act as either a main verb or part of a continuous verb tense. Here it is with be as the main verb.
There may be another chance to take the exam.
Maybe is also sometimes used to make a polite suggestion, as in the next example. The verb be here acts as the main verb.
It may be a good idea to start saving money.
Next is an example with be as part of the present continuous, or be plus ing, verb tense.
We may be coming to your place later today.
And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Alice Bryant.
The Blue Hotel, Part 1.
The Palace Hotel at Fort Romper was painted a light blue, a color of blue found on the legs of a certain bird that makes it bright in any surroundings. The Palace Hotel then looked always loud and screaming in a way that made the bright winter scenes of Nebraska seem only a dull gray. It stood alone, and when the snow was falling, the town 200 yards away could not be seen. When a traveler came from the railroad station, he was obliged to pass the Palace Hotel before he came to the group of low houses, which was Fort Romper. It was believed that no traveler could pass the Palace Hotel without looking at it. Pat Scully, the hotel owner, had proved himself a master at choosing paints. It is true that on clear days, when the long lines of trains swept through Fort Romper, passengers were surprised at the sight. Those that knew the brown reds and the dark greens of the eastern part of the country laughingly expressed shame, pity, shock. But to the citizens of this western town and to the people who stopped there, Pat Scully had performed a wonder. As if the displayed delights of such a blue hotel were not sufficiently inviting, Scully went every morning and evening to meet the trains that stopped at Romper. He would express greetings and welcome to anyone he might see hesitating. One morning, when a snow-covered engine dragged its long string of cars to the station, Scully performed the marvelous trick of catching three men. One was a shaky and quick-eyed Swede with a great, shining, cheap bag. One was a tall, sun-brown cowboy who was on his way to a job near the Dakota border. One was a little silent man from the East Coast who didn't look like it and didn't announce it. Scully practically made them prisoners. He was so quick and merry and kindly that each probably thought it would be cruel to try to escape. So they followed the eager little man. He wore a heavy fur cap pulled tightly down on his head. It caused his two red ears to stand out stiffly, as if they were made of tin. At last, Scully grandly conducted them through the door of the Blue Hotel. The room which they entered was small. It was occupied mostly by a huge stove in the center, which was burning with great force. At various points on its surface, the iron had become shiny and glowed yellow from the heat. Beside the stove, Scully's son, Johnny, was playing a game of cards with a farmer. They were quarreling. With loud words, Scully stopped their play and hurried his son upstairs with the bags of the new guests. He himself led them to three bowls of icy water. The cowboy and the Easterner washed themselves in this water until they were as red as fire. The Swede, however, merely placed his fingers in the bowl. It was noticeable throughout these proceedings that the three travelers were made to feel that Scully was very kind indeed. He was giving out great favors. Afterward, they returned to the first room. There, sitting about the stove, they listened to Scully shouting at his daughters, who were preparing the noon meal. They employed the silence of experienced men who move carefully among new people. The Swede was especially silent. He seemed to be occupied in making secret judgments of each man in the room. One might have thought that he had the sense of foolish fear which accompanies guilt. He looked like a badly frightened man. Later, at dinner, he spoke a little, directing his conversation entirely to Scully. He said that he had come from New York, where he had worked for 10 years as a suit maker. These facts seemed to interest Scully, and afterward he told that he had lived at Romper for 14 years. The Swede asked about the crops and the price of labor. He seemed hardly to listen to Scully's lengthy replies. His eyes continued to wander from man to man. Finally, with a laugh, he said that some of these Western towns were very dangerous, and after this declaration, he straightened his legs under the table, nodded his head, and laughed again, loudly. It was plain that this had no meaning to the others. They looked at him, wondering and in silence. After dinner, it was decided to play a game of cards. The cowboy offered to play with Johnny, and they all turned to ask the Swede to play with the little Easterner. The Swede asked some questions about the game, learning that it wore many names and that he had played it under another name. He accepted the invitation. He came toward the men nervously, as though he expected to be attacked. Finally seated, he looked from face to face and laughed sharply. This laugh was so strange that the Easterner looked up quickly. The cowboy sat with his mouth open, and Johnny paused, holding the cards with still fingers. Afterward, there was a short silence. Then Johnny said,
"Well, let's begin. Come on now."
They pulled their chairs forward until their knees touched under the table. They began to play, and their interest in the game caused the others to forget the strange ways of the Swede. Suddenly, the Swede spoke to Johnny.
"I suppose there have been a good many men killed in this room."
The mouths of the others dropped open, and they looked at him.
"What are you talking about?"
said Johnny. The Swede laughed again, his loud laugh, full of a kind of false courage.
"Oh, you know what I mean, all right,"
he answered.
"I don't,"
Johnny protested. The card game stopped, and the men stared at the Swede. Johnny evidently felt that as the son of the hotel owner, he should make a direct inquiry.
"Now, what are you trying to say?"
he asked. The Swede's fingers shook on the edge of the table.
"Oh, maybe you think I haven't been anywhere. Maybe you think I don't have any experience?"
"I don't know anything about you,"
answered Johnny.
"And I don't care where you've been. I just don't know what you're trying to say. Nobody has ever been killed in this room."
The cowboy, who had been steadily gazing at the Swede, then spoke.
"What's wrong with you, fella?"
Apparently, it seemed to the Swede that he was powerfully threatened. He trembled and turned pale near the corners of his mouth. He sent an appealing glance in the direction of the little Easterner.
"They say they don't know what I mean,"
he remarked bitterly to the Easterner. The latter answered after long and careful thought.
"I don't understand you,"
he said calmly. The Swede made a movement then, which announced that he thought he had met attack from the only place where he had expected sympathy, if not help.
"I see that you are all against me. I see..."
The cowboy felt as though he had lost his senses.
"Say,"
he cried, as he threw the cards fiercely down upon the table.
"Say, what are you trying to do?"
The Swede jumped up.
"I don't want to fight,"
he shouted.
"I don't want to fight."
The cowboy stretched his long legs slowly and carefully. His hands were in his pockets.
"Well, who thought you did?"
he inquired. The Swede moved rapidly back toward a corner of the room. His hands were out protectingly in front of his chest, but he was making an apparent struggle to control his fright.
"Gentlemen,"
he almost whispered.
I suppose I'm going to be killed before I can leave this house.
A door opened, and Scully himself entered. He paused in surprise as he noted the terror-filled eyes of the Swede. Then he said,
"What's the matter here?"
The Swede answered him quickly and eagerly.
"These men are going to kill me."
"Kill you?"
shouted Scully.
"Kill you? What are you talking about?"
The Swede put out his hands helplessly. Scully turned upon his son.
"What is this, Johnny?"
The lad had become ill-tempered.
"I don't know,"
he answered.
"It doesn't make any sense to me."
He began to pick up the cards, gathering them together angrily.
"He says a good many men have been killed in this room, or something like that. And he says he's going to be killed here, too. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's probably crazy."
Scully then looked for explanation to the cowboy, but the cowboy simply shook his head.
"Kill you?"
said Scully again to the Swede.
"Kill you? Man, you're crazy."
"Oh, I know,"
burst out the Swede.
"I know what will happen. Yes, I'm crazy. Yes, yes, of course, I'm crazy. Yes, but I know one thing."
There was suffering and terror upon his face.
"I know I won't get out of here alive."
Scully turned suddenly and faced his son.
"You've been troubling this man."
Johnny's voice was loud with its burden of undeserved blame.
"Why, good God, I haven't done anything to him."
The Swede broke in.
"Gentlemen, do not trouble yourselves. I will leave this house. I will go away because..."
He blamed them with his glance.
"Because I do not want to be killed."
"You will not go away,"
said Scully.
"You will not go away until I hear the reason of this business. If anybody has troubled you, I will take care of him. This is my house. You are under my roof. And I will not allow any peaceful man to be troubled here."
He looked threateningly at Johnny, the cowboy, and the Easterner.
"Don't, Mr. Scully, don't. I will go away. I do not want to be killed."
The Swede moved towards the door, which opened to the stairs. It was evidently his intention to go at once for his bag.
"No, no!"
shouted Scully commandingly. But the pale-faced man slipped by him and disappeared.
"Now,"
Scully angrily to the others.
"What does this mean?"
Johnny and the cowboy cried together.
Why, we didn't do anything to him.
Scully's eyes were cold.
"No,"
he said.
"You didn't?"
Johnny repeated his words.
"Why, this is the wildest madman I ever saw. We didn't do anything at all. We were just sitting here playing cards, and he..."
The father suddenly spoke to the Easterner.
"What have these boys been doing?"
The Easterner thought again.
"I didn't see anything wrong at all,"
he said at last, slowly. Scully began to shout.
"But what does it mean?"
He stared fiercely at his son.
"I ought to beat you for this, my boy."
Johnny was wild.
"Well, what have I done?"
he screamed at his father.
And that's our show for today. From VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.